In the book of Genesis, following the creation of the first man comes the mention of the first emotion. It is not greed, jealousy, love, or fear, but loneliness. Adam is handcrafted by God, surrounded by other life forms in this Garden of Eden, yet he still feels a void. For all he is and has, there is no one to share it with, no one to experience this perfect world alongside him. God recognizes this profound loneliness, this yearning to connect with another, and says, "It is not good for man to be alone." Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. He solves Adam's loneliness with the formation of a partner, Eve. Thousands of years later, man's first emotion still afflicts us. Contrary to what we often think, sex is not actually everywhere. Married couples are barely having sex at all, and those who are having it once a week for around 7 minutes at a time, which can hardly contain the passion that's supposed to accompany it. Where it is found, it's usually in the last place it should be, on screens educating teenagers and preteens, the intrigues surrounding illicit affairs, or the behavior of predators revealed by the hashtag MeToo movement. Sex has taken a hit, becoming a source of division. We've completely lost sight of what sex is supposed to be in our lives. Where sex can serve best in a committed relationship, it's nowhere to be found. Enter Judaism, where sex is regarded in the most beautiful, balanced way. It is an act that employs not just the body, but the mind, soul, and spirit of two people, sewing them together as one. What Judaism understood above all else is that sex is an act of such magnitude that it must be protected and nurtured. But the rules that we hear of when it comes to sex in Judaism sound archaic, even primitive at times. For this reason, the ancient Jewish teachings have often been painfully misunderstood and misrepresented. Take the idea of nidah, an ancient Jewish custom derived from the Torah. Physical contact is prohibited for around 2 weeks out of every month while the woman is menstruating. Only once she has dipped in the mikveh can she and her husband be intimate again. While many find it unnatural and counterintuitive to separate from their spouse for half the month, the practice offers a powerful insight about human nature. The beauty of marriage is the oneness and closeness that two people experience together, but often this total access can lead to overexposure and boredom. Judaism, therefore, brings erotic obstacles and elements of forbiddenness within a marriage, after which everything is allowed in order to renew excitement and attraction. It is separation for the sake of getting closer. Similarly, married couples are encouraged to be modest even within their marriage and advised not to walk around naked. Again, this seems prudish, but this too is intended to optimize sexuality rather than suppress it. We've become accustomed today to the love marriage, a partnership of two best friends who share everything and have no boundaries. But in Judaism, a marriage isn't glued together principally by love, but by lust. In order for a couple to continue to lust for each other, there must be continued desire, and it's the obstacles that foster it. Judaism sees sex as a discipline. It takes the same approach with sex as it does with most human acts. On the animal level, sex is, of course, an impulse, an instinctual act. But though we have the animal within us, we also house the divine. Like anything else in nature, sex is neutral in theory. Once we engage in it, we may imbue it with meaning, and we are affected. Humans crave touch. It is fundamentally overwhelming. Our sex lives are entangled in our mental health, and our bodies get flushed with hormones. But it can also be degraded, often tragically.